left for you to do is leave.
This is your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel, serving the Charlottesville area with home heating oil and propane and famous Exxon gasolines. The wake-up call is also brought to you by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news on Newsstands Thursday. Now your host, Rick Moore.
Welcome, 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 boys and girls, and all those folks who are just finishing up with your bluegrass. Rusty said, I forgot to say happy Thanksgiving. Please tell them happy Thanksgiving for me. So there you go. Check that off my box, Rusty Sempre. Big shout out to the folks listening on Lovingston's 94.7. If you see that black and white border collie with a little pink dot on his nose, we are still looking for Zephyr. And thanks to Buck Island Barbecue for their support today. You can find your Cajun smoked Thanksgiving turkey at Buck Island's barbecue. The turkeys are prepared with a Cajun rub, smoked in plum tree wood, and then cut in a culinary fashion. Buck Island offers information and supplies you need to get started. Buck Island Barbecue on Route 53, just past Monticello in the Charlottesville area. Online, buckislandbarbecue.com. Yeah, BBQ. Yeah, thanks for interviewing me there, Rusty Sempre. All right, 11 o'clock here on WNRN. I think we have a pretty entertaining show today, certainly something that I know nothing about, which is kids. We have two doctors and professors, I guess, from University of Virginia, Dr. Claudia Allen from Behavioral Science. She is an associate professor and director of Behavioral Science in the Department of Family Medicine at UVA. How are you today, ma'am?
Very well, thank you.
Yeah, we got to work on that a little bit. Try that one more time.
Okay, how's that sound?
Well, that's better. And I will just continue to crank up the numbers until we get where we need to be. We also have her husband, Dr. Joseph Allen. He's a professor of psychology and director of clinical training at UVA, as well as a licensed clinical psychologist specializing in work with adolescents. Professor?
Good morning, Rick.
Good morning to both of you. And actually, both professors are licensed psychologists spending their time with adolescents and families. What's the official definition of an adolescent?
You know, that definition is changing, and that's part of what we've been writing about. You know, we used to think it started around 12 or 13 and ended around 17 or 18, and now it still starts pretty early, but we're not quite sure when it ends anymore.
And I guess that's part of the hour. We're going to be talking about their book, Escaping the Endless Adolescence, How to Help Our Teenagers Grow Up Before They Grow Old. Because that's really, I guess, the major facet of the book, correct, is that teenagers are not growing up until much later in life.
Exactly. We're seeing people in their mid-20s, late-20s, sometimes even later, who are still thinking about moving away from home, getting out on their own, and becoming independent. So that independence time is coming later and later and later.
Well, let's start from there. Escaping the Endless Adolescence, How to Help Our Teenagers Grow Up Before They Grow Old. You mentioned in your book that studies show teenagers launch into adulthood more slowly than ever. Any statistics?
Sure. You know, we see it in young adulthood when we think kids should be independent and sort of making it on their own. 23-year-olds these days, even after college years are finished, more than 60% are still getting a substantial amount of financial support from their parents. Even at 25, more than a quarter are still getting a good deal of financial support from their parents. And, you know, those figures are all actually from data taken prior to the last 2 years, prior to the financial crisis. If anything, we think it's probably even more exaggerated now. So at the point where we used to think young people were launched and they were adults and they were doing fine, we're now finding that, no, they're still depending on their parents in a lot of different ways.
And those 23-year-olds and 25-year-olds who are still getting financial support from their parents are not primarily young people who are still in college or graduate school or professional school where you'd assume they might still need some family support. Those people are theoretically out on their own, but not really.
Is this something that has happened in the last generation? I mean, are we talking about from 1990? What the heck is the last generation now? I have reached the age where I can't tell. But from, I guess, being born in 1990 would make you 19 this year. So is this something from the current college generation? Does it go back further? Has it exploded all at once? Has it grown a little bit?
You know, Rick, it's been growing gradually over really a period of multiple generations. You know, if you go way back, you know, four or five generations, adolescence used to really last a microsecond from the time when a young person, you know, developed a new capacity or was able to do something to the point where an adult realized that and said, hey, let's put that to work. You know, jump in. You're part of the adult world here. And it's been extending gradually. It was somewhat the case that adolescence had gotten quite long when we were growing up. College had extended it, but it's really something that in the last 20 or 30 years has kind of mushroomed and really gone from a period where adolescence lasts a little longer to the point where, for a lot of young people, it's not quite clear when it ends.
And I think it's important to make clear that while the current economic downturn has complicated this situation and probably added to it, this is a phenomenon that we were seeing 5 and 10 years ago before we were in this current economic state. So it's not something that's being driven by our economic downturn at all.
Well, what is driving it?
You know, one of the things that's driving it, you know, in the most simple form is the extended period of education that young people get. And, you know, we're going to talk, I think we'll get a chance to talk today about sort of what parents' role is in this and what they can do to get their kids out of it. But it's not something that's just about blaming parents or saying parents aren't doing a good job with their young people or helping them grow up. Our society as a whole has really gotten to the point where we expect young people to stay in a dependent role for a long period of time. And education sort of got that started, but then parents kind of pick up on it. And everybody now has the idea that if you're 24 and you're still sort of casting about figuring out what to do with your life, well, that's okay. And, you know, that used to be something that was true at 19. And now it's just moved later and later and later.
And I think, Rick, that it's something that's driven by something we call in the book the nurture paradox, which is that all of us who are parents very much want to care for and nurture our offspring. We're just hardwired to want to do that. But in generations past, our ability to do that was limited by time and resources, meaning a few generations ago, many families had several children, maybe 4, 6, 7 children. They had their children early while they were still struggling to get on their own feet. They had less economic capacity than most families today do. And so by limitations of society meant that by the time you were 15, 16, 17, your parents needed you to be a bit more on your own. Nowadays, we still want to nurture our kids as much as possible, but now we maybe have 1 or 2 children. We have them later in life when we're a little bit more established, and so our capacity to nurture and nurture and over-nurture has become almost limitless. And that's part of the problem, is that our capacity to nurture doesn't have natural limits on it as much anymore.
And so what we see then is we see parents who are running flat out, you know, using all of their energy, trying to provide as many, you know, summer camps, enrichment activities, you know, lessons, tutors, prep courses, iPods and gadgets to their teens. And yet they're seeing it backfiring with their teens, you know, not only not becoming financially independent later on, but even in adolescence, you know, not learning to master basic tasks, whether it's doing their own laundry or filling out an online application, or even changing a printer cartridge, that their teens are in this more helpless role because they're used to sort of everything being thrown at them, you know, given to them, provided as an optimal experience. And the parents are just incredibly frustrated because they're saying, we're doing everything we possibly can. We're bending over backwards, and yet we're not liking the way things are going.
And what I'm hearing is that it's the bending over backwards that is causing the problem, or what they are complaining to be the problem.
Absolutely. It's in some sense what we find ourselves telling parents is, stop working so hard. Stop doing so much parenting. Stop doing such good parenting. Leave your kids a little bit of room to do things for themselves and make their own mistakes and clean up after themselves. we're telling parents that you don't maybe have to bend over backwards quite as hard as you think you do. And in fact, maybe it would be a good idea if you didn't bend over backwards quite so much. So it's a little paradoxical.
And I mentioned to you before we started the program that I have no children.
Mm-hmm.
And people who listen regularly are also aware of that, because I'll often say something that seems ridiculous. But I noticed that at work, where with the staff that I manage, we have several high school students on the staff. And not for all of them, and but with some of them, it's like, I need you to go sweep that area clean. And the concept of holding and sweeping the broom, they have no idea, not that they've never seen that before, but they have no idea how to hold it to make it work properly. It's like giving them a fish and trying to hold it with two hands and not let it squiggle away from them. And I just look at that, and you know, I sort of close my eyes, and I don't know whether to wander away or to say, look, try it this way. It just dumbfounds me.
Well, that's why it's so great that you have those students here doing this and learning how to hold the broom, because you're absolutely right. That is not something that we as parents are very good at teaching our kids to do anymore. And you know why that is? It's because we think that we should only ask our kids to do things that are enriching or educational for our children's future. We are so concerned, and understandably so, about our kids' future as professionals, as successful people, that we don't want to, quote, waste their time having them sweep the floor. And Joe and I are as guilty of this as anyone. All parents struggle with this, so I don't mean to make it sound like it's simple. But the reality is that most kids are getting through their teens without doing simple things like folding laundry or sweeping the floor. And when they have the opportunity to come work here or somewhere else like this with other adults who aren't going to be treating them as though they're so fragile, that is a great opportunity for them to learn how to get along in life. So I think it's great what you're doing. So I'd say don't walk away. Teach them how to hold the broom.
You know, and whatever you do, don't go sweep the floor yourself. You know, that one of the problems parents have, in some ways we're saying parents should take it easy, but really a lot of times it's easier for parents to do things for their teen than to stop and show them how to do it, because they know that their teens aren't going to get it right the first time. They're going to balk. There's going to be some difficulty there. So it's like, you know, I'll just pick up the dishes, or I'll just deal with this laundry, or I'll just fill out the application for my teen, because by the time I show them how to do it, I could have just done it myself. And of course, that's often true. But the problem is, then their teen never learns how to do even the most basic kinds of tasks.
We're here with Drs. Claudia and Joseph Allen from the University of Virginia. We talk about their new book, Escaping the Endless Adolescence, How to Help Teenagers Grow Up Before They Grow Old. 1112 on the wake-up call, 979-0919, 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS, if you want to call in with your question or comment. And then there's WNRN Studio, if you need the instant message on the AOL system. We're talking about kids doing something at work. But one of the phrases that caught me in your book is, not all teens should get a job. And I think that culturally, whether the individual parent believes that or not, you look at someone else's kid and say, that kid should get a job. You know, they'd get a little more responsibility. They'd, you know, learn about real life, et cetera, if they had a job. But you're saying that not all teens should get a job.
Well, and really, Rick,
isn't that part of growing up?
You know, working is part of growing up, and working in a way that really starts to bring you into the adult world is part of growing up. The problem is that a lot of the jobs we have for teens right now don't do a very good job of getting those messages across. You know, we've referred to it, and others have referred to it as the problem of the Mick job, which is, there are a lot of jobs for teens out there that are designed by organizations so that a company, a fast food chain, can run perfectly well if it's staffed by teens who are half spaced out, you know, sleep deprived, bored, lethargic, and not really caring, and just kind of showing up and going through the motions. And in jobs like that, teens they're not supervised by adults who would say, here's how you hold the broom. They're often supervised by 19-year-olds who are just a year or two past that, but are not really on a very strong career track. And what they learn is a message that, you know, you can get by in life with, you know, half effort. And you can, if you just show up mostly on time, that's really about all you need to do. That it doesn't take a lot of initiative or energy. You don't get a lot of exposure to the adult world. That's not the way it used to be with a lot of jobs. There are still jobs today. I suspect the, you know, the internship you're describing here is probably one of the more positive examples where you really get real responsibility, where you're taught to do things you didn't know how to do, and you get some real value out of it. But simply getting a job isn't enough. And it's not that we think that teens, you know, that jobs are bad for teens. We think that you have to think about what kind of job and what it's really going to be teaching your adolescent.
I think that what we're really looking for and what we're really thinking of when we think of the word job is responsibility and hard work. And our point, Rick, is not so much not to get a job. Our point is to be thoughtful about the kind of work you set your teen up doing. So that might be paid work. It might very well be paid work, but it might be volunteering, or it might be something that doesn't have a name exactly. It might be babysitting for the neighbor's kid after school, or doing some chores. It might be helping out your own family at home. What we're really asking parents to do is to make sure that their kids are getting the chance to do some actual responsible work, and not to assume that if it's a paying job that it fits that description.
You know, one of the things we find with paying jobs that's a real problem is, you know, in contrast to the past, most teens keep most all of the money from their job, and they use it for discretionary purposes. And it's a you know, phenomenon that's been described as precocious affluence. And what happens in that case is that you have teens, sometimes with parents who are struggling to make, you know, the rent payment each month, but you have teens who are earning $200, $300, $400 a month in free spending money. And so we see teens, even in families where there's not a lot of free money, that are out, you know, with their iPhone, and they've got their new leather jacket, and they've got their new stereo. And they have a notion that, whoa, this whole work thing and this whole financial business in adulthood really isn't so hard, because they're getting all the money, but they're not getting any of the financial responsibilities that adults know comes with those incomes and with those jobs. And so we end up with teens thinking, well, a minimum wage job really isn't the end of the world. And if I can get $10 an hour, I'll be doing just fine.
And sometimes that happens not only with teenagers, but that's partly the phenomenon we see with young people who are 22, 23, 24 years old, who have kind of minimal jobs, but they get by living at home off of their parents rent-free and spending all of that income on what we might consider extras. So that the problem is that phenomenon can go on and on and on, and the young adult never actually makes it out of the house on their own because they don't want to give up their opportunity to buy those extras.
Doctors Claudia and Joseph Allen here in the studio today on the Wake Up Call. We're talking about their new book, Escaping the Endless Adolescence. We're talking about helping the kids grow up faster than what happened years ago. I probably didn't word that properly because I'm getting the weird look. But we're talking about kids who are not becoming adults and doing adult responsibilities until later in life than they did decades ago. You talked about precocious affluence. What is the expectation, or what should be the expectation, of a teen or even a young adult who has their job but is currently keeping all the money? Are you talking about tithing your 10% to the family rent? Doing daily duties that they may not, you know, doing more than taking the trash out on Monday mornings? What are we talking about?
Yeah, that is a really, really good question, and one that I think all families with teenagers should be sitting down and trying to figure out. And obviously, it depends on your family and your family's needs. But one thing that really concerns me is, I work at UVA in the Department of Family Medicine, where we see families from all walks of life. So we see families with very, very low incomes. And in those situations where the family's really struggling, one would think it would make sense for a teenager earning some extra money to contribute some of that money to the family's food budget, rent budget, whatever. In a family maybe that's more affluent, It would be important, though, that the parents not just say, well, we don't need the money for our food budget. We've got that covered. So, honey, you just keep the money and spend it on shoes. That might be the kind of thing where you'd ask your teen to put that money aside for college. And maybe you're going to even pay for most of college, but you could still ask them to put money aside to contribute to those larger expenses that are coming down the road. So I think you have to look at your individual family's needs, but you probably should be asking your teen to contribute some of that money to something other than, you know, disposable income.
Well, and teenagers, you know, like having the disposable income in the short term, and they like it, period, but they also really like feeling like they're contributing. And that's something we've really taken away from them, that, you know, we worry so much about adolescent self-esteem and how can we build up their self-esteem and why don't they feel better about themselves? But if you think about it, adolescents are at the peak of their physical capacity, they are at the peak of their cognitive capacity, they're at the peak of their energy levels. And yet, with people doing everything for them, they end up feeling like, look, I am just a drain on my parents', you know, time, their energy, and their finances. I don't do anything for, I'm not any good to anyone. And so, to have adolescents contributing, even in a small way, back to their families or to their communities, isn't just something that they should be doing that's good for their character. That's all true. It's something that really makes kids feel better about themselves.
So that's a really good point, is that it's not just that we're, quote, spoiling teenagers by letting them keep all this money for themselves or whatnot. It's not so much about that. It's that we're really depriving them of the opportunity to realize how competent they really are and to realize that, yes, they can go out and make money that then contributes to their family or to their own future. And we're really just robbing them of that opportunity that feels so good.
We worked with one 15-year-old boy who was sort of struggling, a somewhat lazy, somewhat apathetic kid, and we really pushed his parents to say, maybe this kid should be volunteering somewhere. And well, we can talk more about volunteering because it's incredibly valuable to kids. And they struggled. They struggled to find something for him. They went through the United Way website. Eventually, they hit on a summer camp for kids with physical disabilities, and this was a kid who really liked the outdoors. And so he basically grudgingly said, okay, I'll do that for a couple of weeks in the summer and fine. And I don't think he half believed his parents would follow through, because the morning they first came up to bring him there, you know, he was objecting and he was, you know, practically in tears on the way there in the morning. They picked him up that afternoon, asked him, you know, well, you know, how'd it go? What was it like? And they were kind of worried, would he go back the next day? And his reaction was, you know, Mom, it was a good thing I was there, because they had so much to do that if I hadn't been there, I don't know how they would have kind of managed with the place. There was one kid who was in a wheelchair. I ended up pushing him around to all his activities, and there was nobody else to do it. I think if I hadn't been there, he wouldn't have made it to half the activities. And this kid was just so charged up by the fact that somebody actually needed his efforts and his energy. He probably did more chores, more sweeping of floors and that sort of thing that summer than he'd done, you know, at home, you know, the previous 15 years, and yet didn't complain about it, because he really felt like, I'm contributing something of value to someone. And I think we don't give kids enough chances to really have that, it's a good thing I was there kind of experience, but they thrive on it.
WNRN's Sunday Morning Wake Up Call. We're here with Doctors Joseph and Claudia Allen talking about endless adolescence. Your kids grow old before they grow up, and we're talking about how to make that better. This is the Markets of Tiger Fuel forecast for Central Virginia and the Shenandoah Valley. Mostly sunny today, highs in the upper 50s. Mostly cloudy tonight, but with some rain after midnight. Lows 40 to 45. Mostly cloudy with a little rain tomorrow. Highs 45 to 50, even warmer in Richmond. Right now, there's clouds across the listening area. 51 in the Valley, 51 in Lynchburg, 55 in Richmond, 54 in Charlottesville.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call, brought to you by The Hook and by the Markets of Tiger Fuel, a refreshing pause on your journey to anywhere with locations all over town. Now back to your host, Rick Moore.
And support today also coming from Blue Ridge Mountain Sports, this weekend featuring their Great Holiday Adventure event. You'll find gifts for the outdoorsy peeper in your life from Mountain Hardware, Patagonia, and the North Face. Details online, brms.com, or at your nearby Blue Ridge Mountain Sports store. Charlottesville, they're in the Berkshire Shopping Center, Lexington Commons, and Chesterfield Town Center in Richmond. All right, we got a call. Put your headphones on. And we've got Scott from Charlottesville. Hey, Scott.
Hey, my battery's going low, so I'll just throw out two brief questions and then hang up and listen. I guess number one would be, what do you perceive as the parent's motivation or gain or their sort of where they are in terms of letting their this particular parenting style? And then number two, from everything I read and see, children in many ways are exposed to things at an earlier age. They sort of, in some ways, grow up in terms of their the cultural issues and so forth. Do you have any context to juxtapose that with the fact that they start working later? They certainly have much more knowledge to acquire and so forth at an earlier age. So I will hang up and listen.
Thanks, Scott.
Well, Scott, I think, you know, to take your second question first about kids growing up earlier, you know, they absolutely are in some ways, and that's often disturbing. And what we find is that what they end up doing is taking on the veneer of adulthood, that if adolescents really don't get a chance to act like adults as much as they used to, and I think that's a big piece of the problem, then they grab for, well, what are the things that look like I'm being an adult? And those are the things that really disturb us and concern us. And that involves, you know, being, you know, sexually active. It involves the way they dress. It involves, you know, delinquency. It involves smoking and cigarette and, you know, smoking and drug use. And so teenagers grab for all of those things because they look like they're acting like adults and they don't really have anything else to grab for. And the problem is that those behaviors that I'm describing don't really carry much responsibility with them. They're not very hard behaviors to engage in. And so there's nothing to keep preteens from reaching for those behaviors, too. So we see 11 and 12-year-olds, you know, getting into significant kinds of trouble that used to be reserved for when you were truly an adolescent at 13 or 14. But they realize, well, we can do it. We can do it as well.
Yeah, and taking a stab at the first question, what do parents get out of doing this, I think is what you are asking. And I think that one of the things that parents get out of it is a sense that they're helping their kids as much as they possibly can. We're all just very aware that our kids are going into a world that's a difficult world and requires you to have a high degree of knowledge and a broad skill set and is very competitive, and we're all concerned about that. And so I think we're really just trying to do what we think actually helps our kids. And that means that instead of having them do chores, we rather have them do enrichment. Or instead of having them just hang around the house, we rather have them go off and do some tutoring. Or instead of having them figure out what they want to do, we help them plan an enrichment activity for the summer that's going to maybe get them an internship or get them into college. And we're doing that because we think we're helping. And on the one hand, those things are very good. We're not at all trying to say that people shouldn't send their kids to lessons or enrichment activities. It's more of a balance issue, that if everything your kid is doing is really for his or her own future, his or her own enrichment, his or her own gain, that's very unbalanced, and it can leave a person, as Joe was saying, feeling really like a drain on society. We're teaching our kids how to be really good consumers, and by that I don't just mean people who buy gadgets, but I mean people who consume everything from gadgets and clothes to services, to tutoring, to camps. Our kids know very well how to participate and consume all those services, but we're not teaching them so much how to be contributors. And our kids, the thing, one of the main things we want to get across is that kids really can contribute. When you do give them the opportunity to take charge or to help out, very often 15-year-olds have a lot to offer. And we're just arguing that we need to give our kids more opportunities to actually contribute to each other's welfare, to younger kids' welfare, to adults' welfare than we typically do.
You know, the other thing, Scott, is that parents are scared. You know, it is a difficult world out there, and parents sense it, and they know there's a lot to learn, and they know that it's a complicated world, and they're just worried for their kids. And so they think, they respond to that worry by saying, you know, let me do as much as I can for them now. Let me, you know, provide as much as I can. And to some extent, let me shield them from this world for as long as I can, because it's a difficult world. The problem with that, of course, is that the act of providing all of this stuff and shielding teens from the complexities of the adult world make them less prepared to enter it. And so in their fear, they end up doing exactly the thing that undermines their teens. Rather than letting their teens go out in the world and make some mistakes, to have some failures, learn some things they don't know how to learn, bumble along a little bit, but grow up in the process, they end up shielding them. And in that act of shielding them, they're doing something out of fear, but it brings about the very thing they're afraid of, which is then when their teens are in their 20s, they don't feel ready to enter the adult world.
Thanks, Scott. Good questions. If you want to ask a question or make a comment, the phone line is working. Thanks, Scott. 979-0919. 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. Doctors Joseph and Claudia Allen here. We're talking about their book, Escaping the Endless Adolescence, How to Help Our Teenagers Grow Up Before They Grow Old. I think both of you have used a similar phrase. Kids feel they are a drain on society, or they are a drain on their family. How do you know this? Because obviously, again, I have no children, but what I see are kids who are very excited and very happy to have everybody do something for them. It's almost as though they have their personal concierge. Hey, Mom, you know, can you get me something? I want to. And again, I go back to my sisters, and I think I told you this before we started. I have two sets of sisters, each with kids, and I sit there and watch their parenting skills. And we took a family trip to the beach, and one of my nephews goes, Mom, I don't like this sandwich. And then sat at the table waiting for her to get him a new sandwich, even though he's fully capable of going to the refrigerator and exchanging the ham for the turkey or whatever it was at the time. Does he feel as though that's a drain, or is he very happy to have someone who'll do this for him? It seems that the drain would be felt by the parent, not by the kid.
Well, the kid, you know, it's very hard to turn down something that somebody's offering you that you'd kind of like right in the moment, even if you think it might be, you know, better for you in the long term to do things otherwise. What we end up with are kids who feel very fragile, and kids who don't have much tolerance for difficulty. I interviewed a young man at UVA a couple of years back for a job working with me, who looked great on paper and had all sorts of qualifications and good grades and you know, good activities in his background. Was doing fine in the interview, got to the end and said, I asked him if he had any questions, and he said, yeah, I've just got, you know, one question, which is, I have a sense, as you've described this job, that there might be a few pieces of it that are a little bit boring, and I don't want to have to be bored. So, you know, is this going to be a job where I'm going to have to be bored? And the problem was, he'd gotten into the expectation that everything would be given to him, that everything would be interesting, that every activity was designed for his enrichment. And I can understand that. That made a great deal of sense, but I still didn't offer him the job. And so you get this just, you know, you get this sense of life's cruising along okay with somebody making your sandwiches, but you know you're always just a step away from like, well, what if I have to do this on my own? I'm in big trouble. So we've seen 16-year-old boys who were, you know, football players, sort of strapping kids who could really dish it out, you know, to other kids and were tough kids, on the edge of tears when their parents said, you've got to go around and apply for jobs. And it was like, well, how do I do this? Well, you go into the store and you ask for the application and you talk to the manager. It's like, well, I won't know what to say. And kids will accept the help we give them, and they're not going to turn it down, but they've got this underlying sense that I'm not ready. I'm not doing very well. I'm kind of fragile, and I only make it if everybody's giving me things. And so they feel like they're a drain, but they also just feel very inadequate.
I think the key word here is competence, that when we do everything for our kids, from fix their sandwich to do their laundry to make their doctor's appointments to talk with their professors in college when they don't get the grade they want, and that's something that we increasingly see, our kids end up feeling incompetent, and that is not a good feeling. We all know, we've all been in situations where we felt incompetent, and it's very uncomfortable. And our kids are going out into the world not sure that they're competent to do the basic things like make a sandwich or solve a problem. So it's kind of a creeping phenomenon where we think we're doing nice things for our kids, but in a way we can be depriving them of the opportunity to feel competent. And, you know, that's something that builds on itself, right? When you're 12, you should be learning how to make your own sandwich. When you're 16, you should be starting to be able to go out and apply for a job. When you're 18, you should be able to negotiate with your professor over your grade. And when you're 22, you should be able to negotiate maybe with your boss. But if you don't start out making the sandwich at 12, you're falling behind already, and it's doubtful that you're going to be where you need to be when you're 22.
Who sets the timeline? I mean, if, and I realize I'm asking this sort of in a simplified manner, but who's determined that at 12 it's a sandwich and at 16 it's the job, rather than at 16 it's a sandwich and at 18 it's the job, or at 8 it's the sandwich? You know, is this a cultural thing as to what the expectations should be based on how things went in the 1880s and the 1960s, and now here we are in 2009?
You know, what we tell parents is, you know, it's an easy question to answer in some sense, which is, as a parent of a 12-year-old, 13-year-old, anytime you're about to do anything for your teenager, you should stop and ask yourself, you should have an alarm bell that goes off in your head that says, wait a minute, can I be teaching them to do this for themselves? Would they be better? Would they feel better about themselves if they were handling this? And so there's really virtually no task that we shouldn't be trying to teach our young people to do. If they're old enough to possibly do it, they should be learning to do it. And the fact is, they end up being happier as a result. When teens are not handling basic tasks for themselves, and they're told, you know, just work on your schoolwork, that's what's important, we don't want you worrying about helping cook meals or doing chores around the house or whatever, focus on school and college, and that's really where, you know, the bottom line is, that puts a huge amount of pressure on young people. And we've worked with a lot of young people who were just incredibly anxious because they felt like, you know, everybody's doing everything for me and it's all about school and my grades aren't quite as good as they could be, and I should be working harder, but I find it really difficult. And I'm just going to be letting everybody down. And we've sort of reduced all of their self-worth and all of their self-image to this one college admissions decision. And we see young people who, you know, are everything they do, every activity, every summer activity, every activity in the fall is all geared toward impressing a college admissions officer in a couple of years. And that's both a high pressure experience. It also leaves kids feeling really just flat and bored because it's not a very rich experience.
11:36 on the Wake Up Call, as we talk about Endless Adolescence, a new book from Doctors Claudia and Joseph Allen, Escaping the Endless Adolescence. 979-0919, 1-877 WNRN Rocks. Here's an instant message question. WNRN Studio is, what are signs of let them do this now? So I guess... we were talking about making sandwiches. Don't give the sharp knife to your 8-year-old who needs to trim the whole bird turkey to make their turkey sandwich. But undoing the Ziploc bag that already has the grocery store turkey in it, that may be okay.
Well, you know, the sharp knife is a fascinating example because I worked recently with a colleague from Peru who was studying some primitive peoples there that weren't in kind of the modern industrial culture. And she had a slide in her slideshow of 3-year-olds with sharp knives, you know, cutting vegetables and, you know, doing tasks that we just wouldn't consider letting our 8-year-olds do. And the 3-year-olds had been taught, and they'd had parents supervising them, and they'd gotten a lot of exposure. And I still find it hard to imagine a 3-year-old with a sharp knife under these conditions. But I didn't grow up in this society. But the idea that by 8 we can't be teaching kids to do things is kind of crazy. I show a video in my adolescence course that I teach of young people getting involved in their communities, and it's about a 25-year-old video. And one of the things that's striking is one of the clips there is of kids helping out around the home, and it's what looks like a 10-year-old and a 12-year-old operating a chainsaw and cutting logs for their family. And, you know, again, I'm not sure I would go that far, but it really makes the point that, you know, when they produced this video 30 years ago, nobody really thought much about that. It's like if you taught the kids how to do it and they learned and they were supervised, they'd be okay. we now treat kids as though they're just incredibly fragile. So I would say, you know, the sharp knife with the 10-year-old at Thanksgiving, not if it's the first thing they've ever done with a sharp knife, but if you've worked with them, you know, every week in that way, what a powerful experience to say, I'm the one who carved the turkey, and you do it with parents there, and you learn you've got a lot more capacity and a lot more potential than you thought, and that really carries over in a good way.
Yeah, and you know, we talk in our book about the concept of scaffolding, which is that parents are there to provide support, you know, like scaffolding around a building. Well, parents are there to provide support for when kids are trying to reach a little higher than they've previously gone. So, you know, in terms of when is a child ready to do something more or do something on his or her own? Well, first, I think you need to assess, well, what does the child already know how to do? You know your child, so you observe and think about that. And then you kind of think to yourself, okay, well, what's the next step? And could my child or my teen do the next step, accomplish the next step, if I was there to provide a little bit of that scaffolding, that support? So, you know, if your child already, you know, knows how to, you know, put the sandwich together, then you're thinking, okay, well, the next thing is, can he get the ingredients out of the refrigerator? And then the next thing after that is, can he start planning what the lunch is actually going to be? So it's a step-by-step process. Keep asking yourself, can my child, can my teen do the next harder step on his or her own if I'm here as backup? And, you know, that's a big part of that. That's one of the tricky things, is that allowing kids to do more on their own, in fact, requires a lot of adult work, because it means either we as parents or neighbors or mentors or teachers or older young adults need to be there to help show the way. And that, of course, takes time and effort, but that we argue really pays off.
You know, it's even if they make mistakes, you know, the worst case scenario that, you know, your child cuts themselves, you know, with the knife at Thanksgiving. And that's not something we'd want to see happen. But then the young person learns, well, wow, this adulthood stuff is a bit risky. Bad things do happen. And the flip side is we have young people whose parents have protected them from ever having a significant screw up or failure. And then we send them off in a car driving, and they've got this sense of invulnerability. Well, they've got it because, in part, because we've made them invulnerable. We've protected them from everything, and they haven't had a chance to learn little bit by bit over the years that, in fact, I do have to be. When my parents say I have to be careful, I really do have to be careful.
11:41 here on the Wake Up Call with Doctors Joseph and Claudia Allen, as we talk about kids being a little too young for a little too long in life.
To the Sunday Morning Wake Up Call, brought to you by the Markins of Tiger Fuel and by The Hook, an innovative weekly on newsstands every Thursday. Now here's Rick with what you can find in this week's Hook.
This week in The Hook, more than a month has passed since Morgan Harrington disappeared. As police announced, the young woman was hitchhiking. Some who claim they saw her that night claim her behavior caused concern. Is it okay to burn a politician in effigy? And there's another blind date challenge, always my favorite. The Hook, giving thanks every week. And let's give thanks to Alt Energy for supporting us today. Alt Energy, providing professional design and installation of solar energy systems in Central Virginia and the Shenandoah Valley. Alt Energy solar systems can pay for themselves and reduce your carbon footprint. More online, altenergyincorporated.com. And not that you would, but don't go anywhere, because at noon, it's Drew Thompson with Les Temps Perdue. If French isn't your thing here at the station, that means The Time's Gone By, which is 80s and 90s alternative music. Tune in for it next. Les Temps Perdue, brought to you in part by Plan 9 Music. All right, back in action with professors and doctors, Claudia and Joseph Allen. I see the phone is ringing too, 979-0919. 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. We'll get Kristen to bring that in just a moment. Question, what should parents be doing instead? We're talking about what parents are not or should not be doing. What should they be doing?
Well, parents should be asking themselves, do my teens have the opportunity every week to do something that actually helps someone else, and that someone else actually depends on them for? And that could be as simple, this, we're not talking fancy stuff here. It could be as simple as your teen walks the dog for the older lady down the street, or your teen takes the garbage out for the older lady down the street, or your teenager helps the younger sibling with the homework every week, or, you know, your teenager has a volunteer job or an internship somewhere where they really rely on him or her to actually show up, be there, and do their job. It really builds a sense of competence and mastery and readiness for adulthood to have others rely on you.
You know, the other thing we say to parents is, it's really important to be comfortable letting your teenager make mistakes and letting them fail sometimes and suffer some consequences from that. That, you know, parents are almost afraid to see their teenagers in pain or to see their teenagers screw up, or they think it's going to set them off on the bad track, on a bad track or a bad course. I spoke a year or two ago with a group of my best undergraduates at UVA, and I asked them, as I was thinking about this book, you know, what were the experiences that most made them feel like they were becoming adults, where they really felt like they were growing up? And as I went around the room, I was shocked because they all said pretty much the same thing. They all described places where they had made mistakes, or where there'd been an accident, or where something had gone badly wrong. And it could be anything from, you know, leaving their lights on and their car battery going dead to, you know, one young person described, you know, bouncing a bunch of checks by accident. But rather than these being bad experiences that they described, they then described that they ended up fixing them on their own. And so one young person said, you know, I had to go around to every merchant that I dealt with in Charlottesville and deal with these checks, and it was embarrassing, and I had to pay extra money. But afterwards, I felt like, you know, I can handle this. It wasn't pleasant, but it wasn't the end of the world. I can make it in this adult world. And they all felt like these experiences where they made mistakes and then got the chance to fix them, they were really positive experiences. And I think from the parents' point of view, to some extent, parents would say, oh my gosh, my daughter screwed all of this up with your checkbook. Let me see if I can help her out. She's got so much to deal with. But by not helping her out, they actually gave her the chance to really feel much better about herself and much more grown up than she would have otherwise.
And a third thing that we'd recommend, especially to parents of younger and mid-teens, is to really try to go out of your way to have your teens be involved with other adults in the community. We're in a place in society now where our teens very often only interact with their parents and maybe teachers at school, and they don't interact with any other adults very much in the community. And we kind of don't allow that. We don't allow neighbors or the parents of their friends to interact with them or tell them what to do very much. And we're really causing them to miss out on a lot of really good feedback. It's really important to learn from adults other than your parents. I think we all remember that sometimes you listen to other adults more readily than you listen to your own parents. So if you can get your kid helping out an adult down the street, whether it's volunteer or for pay, you're exposing them to another adult's expectations, and that's going to help them be ready for the adult world.
Got a call from Vern in Suffolk. Thanks, Vern. Suffolk, a little out of the normal area. I like that. Vern says that he put his son into the workforce at age 14, got him involved. He's now in college with a scholarship. Everything went well.
You know, I think that makes a lot of sense. You know, an age 14 is younger than you'd normally enter the workforce. It's probably, you know, it's probably a job that's more tailored to, you know, taking in a young person and teaching them a lot. That it's not something that's sort of just some big corporation that has a slot that you can fit in and you know, do whatever you do. Having that chance to contribute and seeing yourself as a contributor and seeing yourself as taking action on your behalf is incredibly good for kids. And, you know, the sad part is that parents think that they're protecting their kids, or that they think they're doing something really good for them by saying, my kid doesn't have to work, or, you know, I'm going to provide that. I'm going to let them spend their time on things that are going to help develop their capacities. They don't realize that you develop and you stretch by working. And sometimes the financial need that maybe leads to that and that leads to the college scholarship, sometimes that ends up being a good thing.
The other thing I'd say to Vern is good job in finding your son work when he was only 14, because one of the things that parents oftentimes will say to us is, okay, well, this sounds like a fine idea, but I can't find anyone willing to either employ my teenager or even allow him or her to volunteer. A lot of places now will not accept volunteers younger than 18 or some younger than 16. And that's a fairly recent phenomenon. even when we were coming up, by the time you were 14, you usually could find a place that would at least take you as a volunteer. So, I mean, I think parents do oftentimes have to help a young teen in particular find a place that will take them on as an apprentice. But I think as a society, we have to also ask ourselves, you know, should we be allowing 14 and 15 and 16-year-olds to work by our sides a little bit more to help bring them along?
How much of that is related to one another? I mean, you said that's fairly recent. Is that because the employers have found that the 14-year-olds aren't responsible enough and don't know how to do enough because the parents have not allowed them to stretch themselves before they even got there?
It's a vicious cycle. You know, it used to be that adults took on teens as apprentices. And, you know, that was 100 and some years ago. But there's no doubt that those adults who apprenticed those teens must have rolled their eyes at times and must have just thought, oh, my God, this kid's driving me crazy. But they also taught them. And one of the things as a society we've done is we've kind of as adults said, well, that's not our job. You know, that's somebody else. That's what school is for. That's what their parents are for. The problem is parents have just too much on their plates, you know, emotionally to also be teaching their kids how to make it in the adult work world. And schools, similarly, if it's, you know, 30 kids in a classroom with one teacher, there's not very much individual that can be taught in terms of work skills. So it really is up to the community to say, you know, we all need to take some role in socializing our adolescents. If we just leave it to the point where they're getting socialized primarily through, you know, the internet and through peer interactions and through the media, and then we say we're not happy with how they're being socialized, well, that kind of fits, that if we're not taking an active role in teaching them what our values are and recognizing they're not going to start out knowing them, then we're going to end up getting, you know, one person to society gets the adolescence it deserves. And that's I think, where we are sometimes.
Let's take a call. We have Mark from Charlottesville. Hey, Mark.
Hey, how's it going?
Doing well. What you got for me?
Well, I guess I just had a comment on, I guess what you all have been speaking about, like, I guess 14, 15-year-olds working and having interactions with grown-ups and older people. I think that's, you know, that's a really good thing. That's what you all have been speaking about, how you can bring a kid, I guess, out of their shell a little bit if they have some people they have to interact with. But I guess... in my experience was I bagged groceries when I was 14. So I did that every weekend, you know, at Kroger. And that was a good way to have you do a job, what you need to do, and then also push carts. You know, that was like the grunt work, and you had to start at the bottom. But you also speak with people that shop every week. And then I don't know if it's everybody, but you can make somewhat of a friendship or what have you. And I was just saying that y'all do a good job.
Hey, Mark, how old are you now?
I'm 25.
You live on your own?
Yes, sir.
All right. Thanks, man. Best of luck.
I drive for UPS, so use UPS in the future if you can. How's it going? Bye.
Thanks.
Yeah,
and UPS doesn't hire weenies either. You got to be good to get work at UPS.
That's true. That's a great example that Mark gives of when he was 14, bagging groceries, pushing carts. Parents might not think that would be a, quote, enriching experience for a 14-year-old, but he points out that those experiences are richer than they first appear, in that not only are you bagging the groceries, but as he pointed out, you're talking to people in the community, and people are talking with you, and you're being pulled out of your shell a little bit. And sometimes those things that sound so simple are really just exactly the experiences a 14-year-old can use. So that's a great example.
A lot of parents seem to look at every task as what to put on your resume, either for college or for your, you know, your first career job. And Kroger bag boy may not be on their mental list.
Well, you know, it might not be, although as we've, you know, spoken with college admissions counselors over the years, it's changing a bit. College admissions counselors these days are skeptical of, you know, the resume item that says, you know, went to Guatemala for, you know, 3 weeks to help, you know, serve poor people, because they know those are kind of tailor-made volunteer experiences that are sort of, you know, bought for kids in some sense. And I think they're really respectful of the kid who takes just real work and sort of gets the character building experience like Mark had. And it's a valuable experience. But I think the other piece is that this is not just about what you do to get into college. It's about how you make it as an adult. And it's, you know, to some extent, it's going to affect how you do when you get to college. If you can handle bagging groceries and some of the boredom and some of the difficulty of that and the challenge of that, then you're also going to plow through the textbook that you don't like very much in college and realize this is not the worst thing in the world. And in fact, this is easier than bagging groceries. And you know, a young person like Mark is going to be better situated to handle that than someone like the college student I interviewed.
11:54 on the wake up call. A few minutes left. If you have a question or a comment for Drs. Claudia and Joseph Allen, talking about their book Escaping the Endless Adolescence, let me give a shout out to IVN for supporting us today. They feature locally inspired seasonal American cuisine in their historic 18th century house with a garden patio. You can find them on Old Ivy Road in Charlottesville. The IVN serves dinner Monday through Saturday from 5 until 9. Reservations are recommended. More online, ivnrestaurant.com. Professors, we were talking about the kid possibly failing. And again, I go back to that simple idea we were using about making their own sandwich, using the sharp knife, etc. How does the parent handle watching the failure? Because we talk about failure with a sharp knife of cutting yourself, or any other task where the child might fail. And the parent, they don't want to see failure. I think maybe in the future you can look back and say, oh, that was good for them. But at the time, that can't possibly be a good feeling in its immediate context.
No, you're absolutely right. That's one of the toughest places to be as a parent. But I think what we have to keep our eye on is that we're trying to build people here who are resilient. We're trying to build people who can bounce back from small setbacks, because otherwise you get out into adulthood, whether you're in college or you're in your own apartment or you're in your first job, you're going to get hit with some setbacks. We all know it. And so to have gone through some setbacks and to have survived those and realized that you knew how to get your way through the problem actually is going to help you later on. So I think as a parent, I mean, nobody's going to be comfortable watching their kid cut themselves, but watching your child suffer a small failure, like a bad grade, you need to remind yourself, I'm allowing this to happen. I'm letting him or her take the consequences of this small failure because I want him to learn and I want him to be able to handle the bigger tasks that are coming. We see parents today frequently in our therapy practices whose kids have a hard time keeping up with schoolwork, and the parents will let them stay home the next day to make up the work, or will write a note getting them out of the quiz or the test. And we really discourage that, because those are the kinds of little setbacks that can teach a person how to become more responsible, how to become a little bit more disciplined. And even if all goes badly and you get a bad grade, you can learn how to actually come back from that and kind of fix that situation.
Go ahead.
The simple question we ask parents is, when do you want your kids experiencing these failures? They're going to experience them. They're going to have setbacks. Do you want to have it happen in adolescence where you're there to support them, where the consequences aren't that great, or do you want to have it happen later? Would you rather your kid get the bad grade in, you know, their history class, you know, this marking period, and you have to worry about that for college and they have to worry about it, but they learn from it? Or would you rather that that happen in college? Or would you rather that that happen on a first job where the consequences are much greater?
I went to you talk about not writing your kid out of school for the day. I had a dentist appointment as a kid, and it apparently went much faster than expected. And my mother said, all right, I can take you back to school. And I said, no. I didn't do the homework for that class.
Exactly.
I'm going to get completely busted. I thought that she goes, why? Because I thought the dentist appointment, we wouldn't be done until whenever. She drove me right back to school, and I got fried.
Good for her.
11:58 on the wake-up call, just a minute or two left, as we talk with Drs. Claudia and Joseph Allen about their book. We only have a minute or so to go into this, but we talked about what to do, or we need to talk about what to do if your adult child needs to move back home. I believe the word you used was regressing.
Well, sometimes people do need to move back home, and sometimes that, in fact, can't be avoided in this economy. And I guess what we would counsel people is, if you need to go back live home with your parents, make sure that you're actually living with your parents and you're not living off of your parents, if you know what I mean. It's one thing to share a household because it makes economic sense for a period of time. There's nothing wrong with doing that. But that means that you all should be sharing the expenses to some degree and sharing the household work to some degree. It doesn't mean that you should be in the basement playing video games or, you know, online while they're bringing home the paycheck. That would be the regressing.
You know, and you're even if you don't have an income, you can contribute in kind. So if you don't have an income because you're not working, you should have time to do a lot of the chores around the house so that, you know, net result is you're not a huge burden on your parents. You're sort of just splitting the burden.
Can we find your book in the area?
Yes, I think it's at all our local bookstores.
All right.
On Amazon.
Escaping the Endless Adolescence, How to Help Our Teenagers Grow Up Before They Grow Old. Dr. Joseph Allen and Dr. Claudia Allen. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Rick.
Thank you.
Next week, veterinarian Mike Feetz will be here the Sunday after Thanksgiving, so you can call in and ask the vet your question. Happy Thanksgiving, everybody. Have a great week.
This has been your Sunday.